And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, a very good morning to you. Happy Thursday. We are back for another edition of the 9 to noon show, and this is the 7th of November 2024, and there's so much coming up on the show, we are going to struggle to squeeze it all in. But hopefully it keeps you informed, hopefully it keeps you entertained, and we want you involved in the conversation throughout, of course. We had a bumper number of texts in yesterday. In fact, it's been like that for quite some time now. It's great to see the level of interaction, and we just want to keep that going. 0860 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. You can give us a call on 07491 25000. If you want to email, it's comments at highlandradio.com. And of course, if you're listening to the podcast, which many of you do, or for those of you who struggle to get off at night, or maybe you're on night shifts and listen to us as we repeat overnight, feel free, if you have something to say on what we're talking about, to message in WhatsApp or email, and we'll pick it up the following morning and include it in that program. And of course, you can watch the show if it suits you. Maybe you're at home, you're working from the house, you can stick us on in the corner of your front room on your smart TV. The YouTube app is there if it's a smart TV. Many of you have Fire Sticks for many different reasons, and the YouTube app is on it as well. So no excuse not to watch the show if that's what you want to do. And you can take us with us in your pockets, because we're on Facebook as well, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituaries, and on the X platform, if you can find us on it. I'm sure you can, Highland Radio News, I think it is, or Highland Radio. I think it's just Highland Radio. I haven't looked for ages, but anyway. Let's go to the newspapers. Draconnell Tribune: the Mulroy Woods Hotel in Milford is to become a direct provision centre in the coming days. The International Protection Accommodation Service is to house as many as 150 people in 32 family bedrooms. The contract with the owners, Peppard Investment Limited, is for 2 years, but the community believes that the international refugee crisis will be with us for many years. Now, I'll be interested to see how this story progresses, and I'll be interested maybe to get, we'll be covering this, of course, as you might. But obviously, this hotel, when I say obviously, my understanding was is that it primarily housed Ukrainians. But since Ukrainians moved on, maybe into other accommodation or moved home, since the end of the summer, there have been different people living in that accommodation. And I was of the view, or I presumed they were international protection applicants. So that's been the case since the end of summer. I mean, there's, you know, dozens of young people from that area in local schools, for an example. So I don't know where I've missed the step here, you know, as to what seems to have been the case since the end of summer, and now talking about the signing of a contract and how many might be there. Because as I say, you know, there's already quite a degree of integration amongst what I've been told are international protection applicants in schools and what have you locally. The contract, anyway, I've mentioned that. Let me see, where was I picking up here? In their briefing note to public representatives, the Department of Children, Equality, Disability, Integration and Youth sought to ensure the politicians were informed of the developments in Milford. Deputy Padraig McLaughlin said this is totally untrue and it never happened. He stated, the department sent us an email only when the deal was done and the contract signed. We were not consulted at any time because this is not about housing refugees. It's all about making a small number of providers more millions of euro and being more wealthy than any of them could ever have imagined. This is all about profits and not people. Milford and Donegal are disadvantaged areas. The infrastructure in a remote location does not consider how overstretched facilities are, and that is so relevant in health and education. So let us know if you're from that area, what your views are on this, and maybe you can sort out that bit of confusion I have as to how it seems that the Ukrainian refugees had left, were replaced towards the end of the summer with international protection applicants, and that level of integration that seems to already be there, i.e. The children from those families going to schools in the local areas. And then fast forward to what we're hearing about now, that this has just been thrust on the community. I've probably got it wrong somewhere, so I'd be very interested in getting to the bottom of that. Help us out, 086 60 25000, if you're from that area. The delay in rolling out the new community safety partnership in Donegal has been branded a hugely concerning, given the recent sexual motivated attacks against women in Letterkenny and the North West. This is in the New Look Derry People Donegal News. Donegal Joint Policing Committee was disbanded earlier this year prior to the local government elections to make way for the establishment of local community safety partnerships. Last month, Minister for Justice Helen McEntee announced the appointment of chairpersons to the first seven ICSPs being established across the country, but Donegal was not included in that rollout. In October, a man aged in his 20s was brought before Letterkenny District Court charged with the violent rape and sexual assault of a young woman close to Main Street in the town. And I presume the suggestion here is that if the LCSP had been established, that that this might have been avoided. There's also talk of sexual assaults in Derry, of course. Speaking to the Donegal News, former chair of Donegal Joint Policing Committee, Councillor Jerry McMonagle, said the absence of the new LCSPs in Donegal is leaving local communities, particularly women, feeling vulnerable. Is his comments on that. Again, that's another thing interested to hear from you on 086 60 25,000. Their Derry News tells us that secondary schools in Derry have spent over 10.2 million on substitute and temporary teachers over the last 5 years. The figures were obtained through freedom of information requests made to each school individually. So a lot of work from the paper there. If that's something you're interested in, certainly worth going out and getting your copy today. On to the Nationals now, and it has to be said, a little bit of a meltdown amongst a lot of people in the papers today following the American people's decision, not just the college votes, but the popular votes to re-elect Donald Trump as president. It has to be said there's a great deal of, I don't know how you would describe it, a bit of a meltdown anyway. But just what I'm going to bring you, because we just covered this extensively, is what people believe the consequences of Trump's election could be for various major issues, not least here in Ireland, because the government fears there will be fewer job announcements next year and is worried another cost of living crisis could be on the horizon after Donald Trump's secured a second term in the White House. This is the Irish Independent. Officials are also aware that the effect of the Trump presidency could mean more refugees are driven here from war-torn Ukraine and will need to be housed. Trump has promised to set the US corporation tax rate at 15%, the same as the Irish rate, which would discourage US multinational companies from setting up in Ireland. I don't buy that, to be honest with you. I think a lot of these companies not only want but also need a base in Europe, and we have that here, so I wouldn't share necessarily that concern. But who's to say? But reading on here, the pipeline of investment will slow down, the minister said, so new companies that might have looked at coming in may have been considering Ireland. That won't happen until people know what's happening. Companies would wait to see how radical or otherwise the personal appointed by the president would be, and who would have a say in key policies. Now, again, Microsoft recently announced a whole raft of jobs here for Ireland. And Microsoft's a very big, clever company. If they were concerned of the implications of a Trump election, surely they would have held off for a month on that announcement. I mean, there must be more to it than we're being told, if you know what I mean. And we know Ireland's very attractive for many different reasons. So we'll go to the Irish Daily Mail now and see what Mark Nicol thinks. He's a journalist, of course, to see what he thinks Trump's election might mean for Ukraine. Ukraine could be forced to strike a deal with Vladimir Putin after Donald Trump's victory. This according to a senior UK politician. Philip Hammond, who served as the UK's defence secretary and foreign secretary, so he knows what's what, also claimed the world was more dangerous following the US presidential election result. He insisted the outcome is a boost for Russia and added, I suspect some of the biggest celebrations will have been in the Kremlin. There's also no doubt Trump will have a deal brokered by himself in mind that will resolve the situation in Ukraine. For the rest of us in Europe, it's a lot more than Ukraine. It's about our ability to live in peace, to live without a continuous threat from our large and aggressive eastern neighbour. If Putin is allowed to win in Ukraine, I do not think NATO's eastern border is stable and secure. Vladimir Zelensky was among the first international leaders to congratulate Mr. Trump. And what does it mean for the Middle East? Well, Benjamin Netanyahu last night hailed a new beginning in the alliance between Israel and America after Donald Trump's victory. Netanyahu and Joe Biden didn't really get on. The Israeli Prime Minister has clashed publicly and privately with outgoing US President Biden over the conduct of Israel's military campaign. Senior Israeli figures also feared another democratic administration would have led to further US threats to restrict supplies of weapons and ammunition. But Mr. Trump's return to the White House is expected to free Israel from US oversight regarding its military operations in the occupied territories, Lebanon, and across the Middle East. And with all that said, though, Joe Biden still is in power, albeit a lame duck, until early next year. Maybe he has plans, albeit unlikely, to come up with a solution before Donald Trump actually has his hands on the power. Right. You'd be forgiven for thinking we didn't know when our own election was going to take place. That's the front of the Irish Times. It doesn't make the front of many papers, but it is the 29th, and perhaps it's no big deal because it's one of the worst-kept secrets. Taoiseach Simon Harris has put an end to months of speculation and confirmed that an early general election will be held on Friday, November 29th. Mr. Harris said he intended to ask President Michael D. Higgins to dissolve the Dáil tomorrow upon his return from an informal meeting of the European Council in Budapest. It's kind of interesting because the announcement was actually made on Virgin by Micheál Martin, but the Irish Times is going with the fact that it was confirmed by Simon Harris, albeit after Micheál Martin had let the rabbit out of the hat, or let the cat out of the bag. Harris is expected in Dublin tomorrow afternoon to kick off a three-week election campaign that will likely focus on housing, government spending, the cost of living and healthcare. Once President Higgins has granted a dissolution of the Dáil, Minister for Housing and Local Government Dara O'Brien will set the polling date for November 29th. Speaking on the 6-1 News, the Taoiseach said he wanted to wait until the finance bill was passed before calling the election. If you intend to have a postal vote, or maybe you're in a nursing home, hospital or something, by the way, and you may well be on November 29th, you only have really effectively Friday till Friday to register for that vote. The Farmers' Journal has a political angle to their front page, and it's good news for Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil continue to command the support of farmers, the latest Irish Farmers' Journal survey has revealed. With the country on the cusp of a general election, Fine Gael has the support of 37% of the over 1,000 farmers surveyed, with Fianna Fáil in second place on 23%. That represents a 5% increase for the two main coalition partners on the last survey carried out in May 24. If the farming community is any indication of the outcome of the election, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil will be the main parties in the next government. Far from recovering from last May's polling result of 6%, support Sinn Féin has slipped further to 4%. Are you a member of the farming community? And can you understand why a party, which is a significant party, the leader of the opposition, might only be polling 4%? Is it that you don't agree with their policies? Is it that their policies aren't articulated or you don't know them? Is it a case of better the devil you know? I don't know. I'm just throwing phrases out here. But why is support for Sinn Féin so low, apparently, according to this survey, amongst members of the farming community? I'd be really interested in your insights. Let us know, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call. It got touchy, to say the least, in the Dáil during debates in recent days. People Before Profit TD Paul Murphy, he called independent TD Danny Healy-Ray an asshole in the Dáil after he questioned his toddler's gender. This is the Irish Daily Star, if I didn't mention. Mr. Murphy and his wife welcomed their first child, Juniper, in February 2023 and said they would not be gendering the tot. In a Dáil debate on the finance bill on Tuesday evening, the People Before Profit TD interrupted Mr. Healy-Ray when speaking about the carbon tax. "What do you know?" Mr. Healy-Ray said. "So you don't know whether your baby is a boy or a girl." Deputy responded by telling him to F off. He added, "A-hole, you're an effing a-hole." "Well, it's the truth," Deputy Healy-Ray said. "I did not make it up," he told us himself. Several government and opposition TDs interrupted to criticise the comments, with Fianna Fáil's Paul McAuliffe calling Mr. Healy-Ray to withdraw it. Now, obviously, it's fundamentally true, but I suppose you leave the kids out of it, don't you? And family and personal stuff. But anyway, that's how tetchy it got. Is that a sign of things to come over the next few months? The civil case against Conor McGregor is ongoing, and it's covered in all papers, including The Sun. A woman who accused Conor McGregor of rape told a court she thought she'd never see her young daughter again, as the MMA star was choking her. Nikita Hand is claiming civil damages against Mr. McGregor and another man, alleging that she was sexually assaulted in Dublin in December 2018. Ms. Hand has accused Mr. McGregor of pinning her to the bed and raping her in a Dublin hotel. The claims are being fully denied and are denied by both defendants. On her second day of giving evidence to the High Court in Dublin, she said that as she was being attacked, she froze and couldn't move or breathe. Ms. Hand broke down as she gave evidence and sought breaks. The court heard that Ms. Hand had to leave her job as a hairdresser and has not been able to work since due to her mental health. She also expressed her disappointment that the DPP, she had reported it to the Gardaí, but the DPP did not see fit to bring criminal charges against Mr. McGregor, paving the way for this civil case there. And a really sad story from down the country, and it's a man, Michael, described as a gentleman, just 56 years of age. Tributes have been paid to a gentleman who died after he was stung by wasps while gardening. Michael Sheehan, a dad of three from Cork, was cutting a hedge on Tuesday afternoon at his home in Macroom when tragedy struck. It's understood he may have disturbed a nest and was stung several times. A short time later, he went into anaphylactic shock after what is believed after he's believed to have suffered an allergic reaction. We should all really be, you know, you can never predict these things, but maybe this is a warning to the rest of us. I mean, maybe one or two stings might not have given him this reaction, but I presume if he disturbed a nest, there's going to be numerous stings. A family member called 999 and the Irish Community Ambulance from Rathcoole landed close to Mr. Sheehan's home. He couldn't be revived, sadly, and was pronounced dead at the scene. Mr. Sheehan's body was removed from the scene to the morgue at Cork University Hospital, where a post-mortem is to be carried out. So a sad note to conclude a look at the newspapers this morning. OK, the time now is 23 minutes past nine. We welcome on to the programme general election AIM2 candidate in Donegal, Mary T. Sweeney. Good morning to you, Mary T. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, listeners.
Thank you very much indeed for your time. Right, now, you've called a meeting in the Buncrana Youth Club. It takes place this evening. It's at 7:30 p.m. What's it about?
This evening, it's issues that have been brought forward to me. The people of Inishowen have asked me to come into Inishowen and provide a meeting again about the RSE, like what I ran in Letterkenny, to give parents the opportunity and teachers the opportunity to see what's really happening in the background with the Department and Education in relation to the relationship sexuality education. Proposed changes that have been made because the curriculum will be changing between now and 2027 in particular. But there are changes being implemented as we speak. And the other issue of concern is the role of the HSE, and there was a change there that came in quite subtly in relation to mental health capacity. The old Act was 2015. Changes in relation to consent, a patient's consent. It was sparked by concerns raised to me by people in the caring profession working as carers in the HSE when they were being told that if a patient, even with a patient with Alzheimer's, refused you to allow them to change soiled wear, then you had to agree with the patient, which was nonsensical in my opinion. And they asked me to investigate this. And when I started, I became more and more confused because there's grave concerns about the autonomy of the HSC and their role and the idea of consent. And we all had this notion that next of kin had a legal standing. Well, that's all been undermined now. Yeah. And through my research, I met a lady who came from a professional background, and she had her own personal family experience of the brick wall that she was setting with the HSE in relation to getting access to information, even very serious health information about her sister who was in the system. And it's quite frightening. So people need to be aware of this, and we need to be educated about it, because the HSE did have a small meeting in Letterkenny in one of the hotels. By pure luck, I happened to find out about it and attended it. I was not satisfied with the answers that I was given. So I believe that there's a room for the public, especially it's you or me tomorrow, Greg. God forbid if we had a car crash and our mental capacity is reduced. None of us know the day, the hour somebody takes a stroke, a change in circumstances, not just for people with children with special needs or people with Alzheimer's in the nursing home. We need to be vigilant of the changes in law that are being made and being slipped in under the rug, in my opinion.
Recap that. What is that change in that law then?
Well,
policy.
I don't have the full grasp of it because it's difficult, Greg. But what I find out, is there's an office of the confidential recipient there. There is one person appointed for the whole country to give family support. One person is not enough if you're having issues and getting information about your loved ones from the HSE, because you no longer have that automatic autonomy to find out as next of kin. That's changed. Now, the legal profession themselves are concerned in relation to this.
Is there not a system whereby, just from my experience, when someone's in hospital, have you, that, I mean, next of kin has no legal standing in this country. It never did. We use it, really what effectively it means is, who do you call in a crisis? So yeah. that's all it is here. It has no say beyond that. And I'm not trying to contradict you. I'm literally trying to understand it. I thought there's always a point of contact with a member of the family if someone's in hospital or in care.
Yeah, but there's a lot of new positions now that have been rolled in, and I'm not fully au fait with all of them yet. That's why she that's had the experience, the knowledge, is going to talk.
Oh, I get you. Right, I understand.
So one of the things that's come in is a thing called a decision-making assistant. You know, these are all new terms. The idea of creating influence with the family, you know, there's a lot of new terms been introduced out there. We have the concept of a ward of four.
Obviously, some of the language we used and the way we did it was archaic. I was under the impression that this was to empower and support, say, for instance, you know, people with a mental disability, that's what that person's role would be, to make sure that they weren't exploited, to help them make decisions.
It seems to have gone beyond that, Greg. It's not as clear cut as that. And I understand from my research that the Law Society has advised solicitors now, like legal power of attorney, you know, these expressions, they're not engaging with it because they think it's not well considered. Mm-hmm. You know, so we need to find out more. If the Law Society think aspects of this is not well considered, we need to start asking questions.
It is interesting, because the only thing I've heard about this up to date is, up until now, is, you know, campaigning and broad welcome from the likes of Donegal Down Syndrome and other organisations, that they thought that this was, that was really, really positive, and recognising, you know, people's role in society. So maybe there's other elements to this that are, they're negative, or I've missed something, Mary T. But certainly interested in hearing from everyone with an opinion, and I'm sure many will be interested in what's being said in this meeting tonight. The SPHE curriculum, several controversies have risen over recent months in relation to this. The government has stated that they feel that what teachers may have been discussing and taught in some classes is being conflated with what young people will actually be taught in certain classes. I don't know. To be honest, I don't know enough about it to have my opinion fully formed in relation to this. But what's the conversation about that tonight?
Well, we have to thank the teachers, number one, the teachers who stood up, and we have to thank people like the ASTA who give that letter of support to their teachers to not have to teach stuff they're not comfortable with. One of the changes the department has slipped in because of the us highlighting this concern is things like where it previously said in the department's in the curriculum, what is said in the group or the class stays in the group, and this is true for the teacher too. That has now been quite dramatically changed to protect privacy. Students shouldn't talk specifically with names when retelling stories. There's an awful difference in that, Greg. So parents, well done. Keep the letters going in to the Minister, Norma Foley, and keep the pressure on the schools to know that parents need to be informed properly about what's going on. Now, I have other information coming in there. There's other changes randomly been slipped into the curriculum guidelines. And what I did notice was very interesting is one of the resource materials for the teacher is on a sale in one of the departments. I'll send you on the link to it later on there. Some of the stuff has been reduced. It's obviously not going to be used anymore because some of the content on it was quite graphic as well. And even things like teachers uncomfortable with, when you greet your students for the first time, announce your name and your pronouns. My name is Miss Murphy and my pronouns are she and her. You know, where are they going? I think the American elections has told people we've gone far enough with this. We need to protect the mental health of our children. And the book that I found that has been reduced on the website is one that was supposed to deal with the mental health of children in the schools. And it was, to me, there was a glowing endorsement from the Department of Education in a letter with it. And it's called, the website's called Outside the Box, OTB. And the they actually were encouraging children to cry. Greg, there's that much in it. I couldn't, honestly, without doing a specific class or a full session on it, there's that much in it.
Right, well, listen, if people do share your concerns and they want to hear from people, a retired legal professional, another speaking tonight, they'll attend. It's tonight at 7:30 p.m. It's in the Buncrana Youth Club, and it's in relation to the mental health and capacity. There are concerns being raised on that. I think, as always, and I know you're very responsible, Mary T. Sweeney, that, you know, we all have a responsibility to ensure that we're not necessarily platforming one person's concerns with it, and that we actually get the wider view of the benefits or otherwise. Okay, Mary T. Sweeney, thank you very much.
I just say briefly, Greg, just... I was the first to highlight the concerns for women on the streets in Letterkenny, and I'm sad, like, we still have continuous drop in the Garda numbers. Our Garda teams are not happy. I've talked to so many guards that want to leave the profession. We need to get on top of this immediately. People in power need to start to make a concerted effort to reinstate the Garda confidence in their system, and that's not happening. And as I say, the Milford footpath, nobody took on board the when I highlighted three times in the last 2 years the footpath between the Milford, the Mulroy Hotel, and the shopping centre down in Milford, which is a couple of hundred yards away. You know, to think that they wouldn't repair a footpath to make it safe for people to walk, and now they're going to ignore a whole community and not consult with them. Not on, not acceptable, and the government's gone too far continuously.
All right, thank you very much indeed. That's N2 election candidate in Donegal, Mary T. Sweeney there. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. If you have any views in relation to that, please get in touch or give us a call on 07491 25000. A caller says, why is Sinn Féin complaining about iPass centres now when their policies open borders? They haven't complained about it before. There must be an election coming up soon. That's not what the stated policy is, but I understand it's you're open to interpret it whichever way you see fit, because you're the electorate. Shame on Mulroy Woods. What facilities are in Milford and surrounding districts to house welfare tourists, as some would say, as that listener actually described them? The incident in Ballyhadeerin regarding the 14-year-olds not being reported in the mainstream media yet. We are seeing it all over TikTok. This is all to protect immigrants so we don't dislike them. Well, see, this is the problem with social media, in that Ballyhadeerin is being investigated by Gardaí. They believe it's two underaged people that were engaged in activities in an abandoned house there, and one of the parties is the 14-year-old you referenced. The other is neither a refugee or seeking protection in this country. So I don't know what you're seeing on TikTok, but these are like everything. It has to follow its legal course now. The warmongers are complaining now because the war may be coming to an end. If you remember in the beginning of this war, the Donbass area was under attack for several years. Zelensky wanted to broker for peace, but he was persuaded by the US and the UK to fight on. It may seem cynical, but we must also remember that these countries are war machines. Lots of money to be made in keeping war going while innocent civilians and soldiers die needlessly. But I presume there's two things going on there. Firstly, you're saying that there's money in war, which clearly they are, but then you're saying that people might fear that Donald Trump could end those wars, which presumably then would end the stream of money, if that makes sense. Maybe you can help this listener. I'm looking to upgrade my septic tank, as I'm afraid of what damage it might be doing to the environment. I've contacted the Donegal County Council in Lifford, and they only carry out the inspections. I'd like to know, who do I contact to see if I'm eligible for a grant? Would you or any of your listeners know anything about this? So can you help a listener out there? They're wondering how they can go about getting a grant. Right, OK. Declan Meehan has written, the Mulroy Woods Hotel has been used as an accommodation centre for refugees since spring of 2022. At its height, the hotel hosted over 140 Ukrainian refugees. As Ukrainian people left, they've been replaced by refugees and asylum seekers from other countries. This has been happening since May 2024. And that puts a bit of flesh on the bone, what I thought was common knowledge in the local area. Declan Meehan, thanks very much for joining us.
No problem, Greg. Good morning.
My understanding is that international protection people have been living there since the late summer, and I think somewhere in between 15 or 20 young people from these families are actually already at school. So, and also now I'm reading today that an iPass centre has effectively been dropped on the people of Milford. Now, I'm not saying I'm not saying what's right and what's wrong here at all. I'm just confused at the timeline. Can you help me at all?
Well, look, I can, I suppose, only go from my own experience of working with the refugees that have been based in the Mulwar Woods since April 2022. I know that there was a contract change with the Mulwar Woods back in May, and up to 59 international protection applicants have been housed there since then. And there's kind of been a gradual turnover as Ukrainians have either left or been moved on by the department, that they've been replaced by other international protection applicants. So I guess the announcement late yesterday and the coverage of this direct provision centre for a lot of people in Milford, it might come as a surprise, but for a lot of people, I think that it probably won't, because they know that the Mulwar Woods has been used as an accommodation centre for refugees, either Ukrainian or international protection, for over 2 years now.
But obviously there can be difference whether it's right or wrong in the public's attitude to Ukrainian refugees and international protection applicants from elsewhere. As it stands, do you know how many IPAS people are in Mulwar Woods?
No, I don't know the exact figures, Greg. Like, again, from working with them, I'd estimate that there's probably somewhere in around 100 there at the moment. And obviously this contract for the next 2 years is to accommodate up to a maximum of 150 people across 32 rooms, I might add, which is an average of 5 people per room. So that's what we're looking at the minute. I suppose you have been speaking, or Helen Grado has been speaking, to Deputy McLaughlin about this, and I would agree with him on a lot of what he has said. You know, as elected representatives, there was no consultation around this, but I mean, again, this has been in place since April 22. You know, we were just notified of this last week via email of the 2 year contract. And it doesn't give us the opportunity to highlight the issues that are on the ground here in Milford with regards to additional pressure being put onto schools, onto healthcare, and onto public transport, as well as other community amenities. So again, I mean, the government really should have this process sorted out and streamlined by now. You know, these are the kind of issues that have been raised up and down the country over the past number of years since the increase in numbers of Ukrainians and those seeking international protection has been underway.
What's the reaction in the community then? Because I find it hard to believe that the majority of people didn't know that there were refugees living in Mulwar Woods. But what has the reaction been to this news that now it's a 2 year contract and speculation that it could be single males that could eventually be moved in there or what? Like, I mean, I want to talk about the infrastructure, but I also want to get from you, and others might disagree with your interpretation of it, what's the sense amongst the local population?
I think the sense among the local population is the majority of people would have been aware, as you've said, Greg, that the Mulwar Woods has been used and has been used for international protection for the past few months. But the overriding thing here is that the people in the community are concerned that this is a 2 year contract. It's a significant increase in population that has already been in place, but it's confirmed now for another 2 years. Mm-hmm. And yet we don't see any plans to invest in key infrastructure to meet the demands that an increase in population brings.
Were you given, we'll get on to that. Were you given any information in the contact you received from the department as to the makeup of these individuals, i.e. the family makeup? Because, of course, whilst at the moment we know for a fact, because there's at least a dozen school-going children there, that it's clearly a mixture of families and others, but the fear could be that as they are processed or moved on or given citizenship or a right to stay or whatever it might be, that then mm-hmm. the 150 unvetted lads that we're going to hear about could land. Was there any clarification given on that in the email?
In the email that elected representatives were provided with, it explicitly states that the accommodation in the Mulwar Woods is for families only.
Right, okay. Now, let's get to the infrastructure, because we heard from Mary T, and in fairness to her and others, have been campaigning and highlighting dangers, really. You know, we get lots of correspondence here, Declan, about people, you know, walking on the wrong side of the road in dark clothing, not on the footpath. I think there's an awful lot of education needs to be given to let everybody know in the community what the rules of the road are and what's safe, because it's difficult for me to read it out because often it references people of different nationalities and I have to be careful too in how I use language in that regard. But anyway, all that being said, the infrastructure doesn't lend itself to safe road usage.
No, absolutely not. I mean, this is something that I've been highlighting since before the local elections and since the Mulroy Woods opened in April 2022 as an accommodation centre for refugees, the dire need for a footpath and lighting from the town, from the town boundary at Little there up to Mulroy Woods. This will make it safer for pedestrians and for drivers alike. I mean, I am contacted on the regular, as I'm sure lots of other people are, like yourself included, Greg, about the dangers on that particular stretch of road, even as recently as last night. So, look, that's one component of the infrastructure. And I might add that a campaign to put a footpath for that stretch of road has been in place and running for in excess of 20 years. One of the frustrating things around providing emergency accommodation for refugees is that there's an exemption on planning for a lot of this, right? So if you were looking to house 150 people in an estate at or in and around the Mulroy Woods Hotel, the very first condition of your planning permission would be that you have to facilitate the installation of a footpath and lighting there to link it back to the town. And it's frustrating that that isn't required whenever a business like the Mulroy Woods is seeking to host this number of people in their accommodation. So that's a huge issue.
And also, too, just in relation to resources, and one of the resources is education, right? And we have to think of all children. We have to think of what's beneficial to the children that are already in a school and you know, what's beneficial to those who may start attending a new school. We know of the overcrowding problem at the school in Milford, of course, because it's been broadly covered here. I think it was an RTÉ this morning and will be this evening. And they're campaigning saying that, you know, I mean, we've seen the video and we've seen the footage. The school is incredibly overcrowded, no green space, unsafe steps, accessibility issues. You know, where is the support for communities to enhance, be it infrastructure, the likes of the footpath, it could be buses, or it could be schools, or indeed capacity in the health service locally? You know, where are the supports to support the community? Because this is where the anger is going to be driven from.
Yeah, and look, Greg, the short answer there is no avenue for the community to get that support. And we know it in Milford because we've been hosting refugees very successfully, I might add, since April 2022. I mean, at its peak last year, we were hosting over 260 in Milford. So there isn't really avenues for the community to get the support that it needs. Like, obviously, the school is here in Milford is one of the big issues. That's been an issue for decades in terms of the expansion that's needed there. I was down at the demonstration yesterday that the school and the Parents Association had organised. And it's a real sense of neglect and a real sense of being let down. The school is an absolutely fantastic resource. It's an amazing educational institution in the town. It's where I went to school myself. And it's been left behind by the government. And so much more is being asked of it. Mm-hmm. And so much more is being asked of all of our infrastructure, whether it be education, whether it be health, or whether it be public transport.
It's just also, too, at this point, too, it kind of starts changing what Milford is, for example, you know, in terms of, you know, no accommodation for tourists, for example, very little accommodation. You know, one texter says, shocking news that people in Milford knew nothing about asylum seekers being housed beside them with no consultation. You're suggesting that's not the case. I think really what I'm trying to do, that everyone has a say in this, right? And we're all from Donegal, we're all from this region. But there's going to be people from outside Milford that are going to read this different. I'm really keen to also hear from people from within Milford as well as to what their attitude to all of this is. That's very important to me because ultimately they are the people sharing the resources and sharing the accommodation, whereas you know, someone from outside the area can be angry, but it's not their lived experience and may not be fully reflective of the local public attitude. So I want to be careful in how we tiptoe through this one. Personally speaking, now, they could be furious and they can flood the switchboards, and that's fine, but I just want it to be truly reflective of the people of Milford.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note as well, Greg, that it's not to dispute if anyone says that they were not aware that international protection applicants were being housed in the Mulroy Woods, then, you know, you got to take people at their word in terms of whether they were aware of it or not. But, I mean, everyone is aware that it was used for refugee accommodation since April 2022. And look, I mean, there's little change in that regard, because what we have here is, when we're talking about resources, we're looking at the increase in population. We're also looking at the makeup of the people who are actually resident in the Mulroy Woods. The commitment has been given by government, and I would certainly hope that that is held to, that the makeup of those people living there will be families. But with that comes additional strain on services. I mean, for example, Greg, in addition to the pressure on the schools here in Milford, not just the primary school, but also the secondary schools, we also have public transport that is not fit for purpose. We're not on a local link route here in Milford Town. We have Patrick Gallagher coaches, which comes through twice a day, and that's it, that links to Letterkenny, as opposed to, say, Rathmullen or Remelton, which now has eight links a day to Letterkenny. So there's huge discrepancies there. There's huge shortcomings in the infrastructure. You can't put 150 careless people into a hotel, expect them to integrate if public transport isn't there.
Okay, just one point before I let you go, and I appreciate your time. A number of people say no one was worried about a footpath out to the hotel for locals or visitors. It's only now that refugees or asylum seekers are in there that the footpath conversation is coming to the fore. My memory is the footpath has been on the agenda for quite some time.
Yeah, look, I mean, I can't speak about politicians and their priorities before refugees came into the community, but as a Milford native and resident, I'm certainly aware of the push for it over the past at least 20 years. I think that there's no point in shying away from the point
in
that,
fairness, that
housing
might,
150 people.
Yeah, in fairness, that might speak. Maybe these people are correct in that, you know, maybe the political push is on now because it's refugees. And whilst locals, it's a funny phrase that nowadays, but whilst the people resident there all the time may have wanted it, maybe the political push wasn't on like there is now. But anyway, thank you very much.
Just Greg, yes, on that. I think that's fair enough, and I don't think they should shy away from that. It is the case that the push is on it now, but that's because 150 people are resident there without cars. So it changes the dynamic and it changes the traffic on that road. So it only makes sense that it would be a heightened campaign around it because there's more people there, regardless of whether they're refugees or locals.
All right, okay. We'll leave it there. Thanks for your time, Declan Meehan there. As I say, everyone's entitled to their say. Very interested to hear people's views on this, and particularly from the many, many thousands of you that listen to this show every day from Milford. I also do want to make sure that I'm fully representing your views. They could be positive. They could be negative. We're not filtering them out here. It's just we want everyone to have their say. But as I say, I'd be really keen to get my finger on the pulse of what Milford people feel. Declan, a caller says, got elected on the back of the Ukrainians. Not right person to be asking. Mulroy Woods sneaked those refugees in drips and drabs. Sure, that's Declan would agree with that assessment, but that's yours. Greg asked Declan about tourism in the area. Nowhere for anyone to stay. That is also accurate at a point that I actually did put to him. Morning, Greg. Shocking news that people in Milford knew nothing about asylum seekers being housed beside them with no consultation. Thank you. As I say, I'm not from Milford. I knew they were there. But anyway, I'm not taking a side in this. I'm just trying to figure out where we're at. Could you ask Declan to explain the difference between Ukrainian refugees and IPAS refugees? The IPAS refugees have been moved from Mayo to Milford. Why? Well, they have been moved around the place. Why have they been moved from Milford or Mayo to Milford? Have all of them? I'm not sure of the answer to that. I mean, there is a difference as to how the state treats Ukrainians and then people seeking international protection. I think we're well aware of that, are we? Hi, Greg. Just another underhand move on the department just before the last local election. The government announced they were moving Ukrainians on and giving back local rural hotels to tourism. but what they were doing at the same time, moving Ukrainians out and putting even more in instead. Mulroy Wood should not be a refugee centre. It's a small rural town like Milford cannot cope with all these extra people. The services are simply not there. This is just another get-rich scheme. Yeah, and some hotels have gone back into regular use, but obviously that is not the case. And also, too, I don't know the makeup of the company or who owns that hotel, but they may well have preferred the revenue from it being an IPAS centre or direct provision, or however it's described, versus, you know, operating in the tourism market as well. So maybe, I'm not saying it was offered, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but maybe there was a business decision made there.